It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'll be your host this morning. And today we have on the show from the Partnership for Public Service, Janelle Callahan, who's going to be talking about the Best Places to Work survey. They just recently released results. Janelle, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you.
Just a reminder to our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And also a word to our listeners that you can call us at 1-877-936-9333. That's a toll-free number. If you'd like to discuss any of the subject matter that we're talking about, or if you have an observation about the best places to work in government that's been around now for a number of years, it comes out every 2 years, please feel free to participate. Give us a call, or if you're at work and it's not convenient for you to call, drop us an email, fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So Janelle, what do you do at the partnership that has to do with this Best Places to Work survey?
Well, I'm on the research team, and Best Places to Work is my main project. And so this is, of course, the fifth year that the partnership has produced the Best Places to Work rankings. And so it's my second time working on it.
And you do this, I think, in conjunction with American University, and you also rely on OPM to give you some of the underlying data. Could you tell us how that whole process comes together?
Sure. So we use OPM's Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey to produce the scores.
Didn't that used to have a different name?
It was called the Federal Human Capital Survey. They changed the name, and they also made some improvements to the survey this year, too. So they did some slight changes.
This is that survey that I hear stories from federal employees that, like, they get the VA employees get a free little coupon to use in the canteen if they take the survey, that kind of thing. That a lot of agencies really want their employees to take that survey.
Well, yes, some agencies do provide incentives or, do a big communications outreach effort around the survey because they do want employees to participate so that they get a high response rate.
And if I were in an agency and I had some control over it, I would want those employees who like the agency to respond and the other employees to not respond. I mean, does an agency try to do anything like that?
I mean, we haven't heard about anything like that happening, but, I think in general, agencies are very interested in making sure that they hear from all of their employees.
Okay. So would you give me the name of that survey again?
It's the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey, and it was conducted in March and of this year.
March of 2010. And so federal employees, a lot of them will respond to this, and then OPM basically compiles the data, and then the partnership pulls it together to come up with this list. How do you do that?
Well, we take OPM's data and we transform it into our rankings. So we have the overall Best Places to Work index score, which is a measure of overall satisfaction. And so we take the percentage of positive responses to questions like, I recommend my organization as a good place to work, how satisfied are you with your job, and how satisfied are you with your organization? And we take those percentage positives, and we have a formula that we use that was developed in conjunction with our technical partner, the Hay Group, and we produce an index score. And that's what the overall rankings are based on.
And can you tell me what some of the criteria are that you look at?
So we have our rankings for large agencies, small agencies, and subcomponents. And the large agencies have to have more than 2,000 full-time permanent employees. And small agencies, it's less than 2,000. but more than 100 full-time permanent employees. And then for the subcomponents, it's just more than 100 full-time permanent employees.
And the subcomponents, like, for example, the IRS is part of the Department of Treasury. You do a separate kind of subcomponent for the IRS?
Yes.
So any part of an agency that has more than 100 employees will have its own ranking on the best places to work?
If we get the data from OPM, not all subcomponents are identified in the OPM survey.
But the IRS is, because we have the IRS coming on our show a little bit later this morning to talk about how they feel the impact of this survey and what the results are, what it means to an agency. It's interesting to me because you mentioned that this is the fifth time, I think you said, that the best places to work has come out. Is that right?
Yes.
And it's interesting to me because before this survey came out, everyone just sort of muddled about, and now people really care where they stand on this survey. What are some of the feedback that you get at the partnership about how important this survey is every 2 years?
Well, we really think that agencies need to be paying attention to what employees are saying about the agency. And one of the reasons we do the rankings is we think that it helps to identify areas where agencies might be having trouble so that they can make improvements. And, you know, we also think that it holds leaders accountable to their employees and their feedback. And so, we do the rankings to give voice to the employees and what's going on there, and hopefully leaders will respond to that. And we also think that it provides a roadmap for managers on how to maybe focus on some different areas that where they might see trends going in the wrong direction.
One of the interesting things that I had observed in the past, and I really haven't looked at this year's Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey to see if it's still the case, but in the past, when employees are asked for their opinion on their leaders, they seem to give a pretty good score to their immediate supervisor, but a not so good score to the higher ranking leadership. And the Human Capital Survey was not really specific about breaking that down between the career senior executives versus the political leadership. And I've always wondered about do the employees not like the political leadership? Do they not like the career leadership? Or is it a little bit of both? The questions asked gotten a little more specific on trying to define the different levels of leadership?
Well, the questions have to do with supervisor, team leader, and that's how they are identified in the survey. And then the questions around senior leaders. In the beginning of the survey, OPM provides a definition of senior leaders. This would be the executive levels, SES. But they don't provide any distinction between politicals and non-politicals.
And it just seems to me, that's one thing I've commented on before, that would be a nice distinction to make, because sometimes there is a real difference in capability and in focus, and that sometimes comes in, into the workplace and can affect an employee's viewpoint. One of the things that, it's interesting to me that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is once again the number one agency, and it's how many years in a row for them to be the top agency?
This will be their third year in a row.
What are they doing right?
Well, we know that they pay a lot of attention to the employee survey, and so they, really dig into the data and try to understand what's going on. And, we've heard also that they try to promote a culture of healthy work-life balance, which, we know is important to people.
What does that mean?
Well, it in our survey, we define it as, having enough resources to do your job well, having an appropriate workload. But also, we have we measure family-friendly culture and benefits, and it includes things like flexible work arrangements and telework. And we know that NRC has focused on some of those areas.
So NRC pays attention to an employee being able to telework, being able to take time off if they need to be with their family, that kind of thing?
Yes.
And not burdening employees so much that they don't have a personal life?
That's what we've heard.
One of the other things in past surveys, and I don't know if it's true this year because I haven't really studied this year's results, but in past surveys, NRC has gotten high rankings for how its employees view their leadership, and the leadership seems to be, very much, employees understand what their leaders want, what their leaders expect of them. Can you tell me a little bit about how they fared on that this time?
Sure. Well, they did quite well, and we know that across government, effective leadership is a key driver of overall satisfaction. So it's very important. Leadership is very important when it comes to overall satisfaction, and particularly the senior leaders. And so, NRC, it's not surprising that they score very well on senior leaders.
And that's, I think, an important point, because that's one of the areas where I think consistently, at least in the past, the employees' viewpoint of senior leaders has been one of the lower rated questions in the survey, and so if NRC does really well on that, then they've got something they're doing right to make their employees think highly of them.
That's right.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm talking to Janelle Callahan of the Partnership of Public Service. We're talking about the best places to work in government, the survey that was just released. And when we return, we're going to talk we're going to be joined by Julie Caldwell from the IRS Employee Engagement Program. She's going to talk about what impact the survey has on the Internal Revenue Service. We'll be right back.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. By now, you've no doubt seen those car insurance commercials with the talking gecko on TV. He's always talking about how people could save 15% or more switching to GEICO. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal in and of itself. But get this. If you're an employee of the federal government, you may be eligible to save even more than that. That's something the gecko didn't mention in all those commercials. And you've probably heard many times about how many people have switched to GEICO. Millions. But what you might not know is how many people stay with GEICO once they've switched. In fact, on average, GEICO customers who are federal employees have stayed with the company for over 20 years. Now that's customer satisfaction. Sound like a good deal to you? Then just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford, and today I'm talking with Janelle Callahan, Partnership for Public Service. We're talking about the best places to work survey. We're going to be joined by Julie Caldwell from the IRS in just a few minutes. If you have a question or comment, please give us a call toll-free at 1-877-936-9333 or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Can you tell me, we talked a little bit about the methodology. I mentioned that NRC is the top agency. Tell me a little bit more about some of the other agencies and how they fared and didn't do so well, and the ones in the middle and the other notables.
Sure. So GAO also was one of our top agencies, and they placed a very close second to NRC. And GAO, of course, is not executive branch, but they do their own employee survey and provide us with the results, and that's why we're able to include them in the rankings.
So it's interesting to me that both GAO and NRC strike me as being agencies that are not particularly political and would have career leadership at the senior positions. Is that that's an interesting observation about them versus perhaps some of the other agencies?
Sure, and we've also the size as well. They're smaller compared with some of the other larger agencies.
That's true. Both of them are on the smaller side, even though they're at your large definition. Who else did well?
Well, we also award our most improved agencies, and the most improved large agency was the Department of Transportation. They improved by 15.8%. Which is remarkable for such a large organization. And we know that FAA, which makes up a large part of transportation, improved by 19%.
And FAA would be the Federal Aviation Administration, part of Department of Transportation, but actually operating somewhat independently like the IRS does in their relationship to Treasury. So there's a significant part of DOT's improvement dealt with FAA doing better?
Yes.
And where did DOT, Department of Transportation, went from what place to what place? Do you know the?
32 to 27.
I believe 32 is like last?
Yes, it was. They were. Yes, they were last.
So we're about to go to Julie Caldwell from the IRS. How'd the IRS do?
The IRS was ranked 79 out of 224 subcomponents.
So in the top third, just about?
So, yeah, very good. And they actually went up by 8.9% from 2009. And we know that they've had steady improvement over time. So from 2003, they actually went up by 21.6%. So we know the IRS has been doing a lot around the employee survey and trying to understand their employees.
So I'd like to welcome this time Julia Caldwell to Fed Talk. Julia, welcome to Fed Talk.
Hi, good morning.
And I understand you are with IRS as Human Capital Office. You're the responsible for the IRS engagement program. You do the IRS All Employee Survey, the Leadership Coaching Program, and other engagement initiatives. Is that a fair summary of what you do?
Yes, it is.
All right, and the IRS is very special to me because that's where I used to work back before we had these kinds of surveys. And I remember it as being a pretty good place to work, but nobody liked us because of our mission.
Yeah, we're not exactly the most popular agency at times.
But I remember liking to work there, and it's encouraging. And you heard what Janelle said about your the increases in your test scores and where you stand. I'd like you to tell us a little bit about what this test means for somebody like you who's responsible for it in an agency.
You mean what does the survey really mean for us?
What does it mean for you? You're in a position to see it. What does it mean for the IRS?
Okay. Well, firstly, as you were mentioning, we also conduct our own internal survey. So we work with the FedView survey results as well as our own internal survey results, which I think gives us a really nice advantage in some regards, because what we do internally for our survey is we do mirror many of the same core questions that are on the FedView survey. So what happens is once we receive our FedView survey results, we also take a look at those in correlation with our internal survey results to try to assess, okay, what are each of these surveys telling us? In which areas are we clearly doing well on both surveys, and in which areas are we maybe falling short, and what we need to do to pull both of those areas up or pull both areas up by based on those surveys. We also are able to work further with the Partnership for Public Service and getting guidance from them as well on how we need to best focus our areas.
So when you break this down, what are the areas that you end up focusing on?
Well, it can differ, but typically what we do is we, like I was saying, we work with the Partnership for Public Service, who provides us through an action planning process, a priority matrix, if you will. And so through that matrix, we can tell how we could most efficiently focus our efforts. So we never want to lose sight of areas in which we are doing well. So we don't want to lose the momentum that we have there. So I know for 2009, we looked at the employee skills mission match particular area, so making sure that people were lined up in the right roles, as well as we took a look at effective leadership, where we have several different dimensions that fall under effective leadership, such as empowerment, senior leaders, and effectiveness. So we take a more in-depth look at those particular areas, which we seem to fall in a lower quadrant on, and looked at ways in which we can improve those particular areas. Now, for 2010, we're still assessing the information. We also are going to be looking for guidance as well from the partnership to further determine, are these particular areas our same areas of focus upcoming, or do we need to make some adjustments in how we look at the results of this?
And, Julie, this is obviously part of your job, you know, every day, but how do you get the IRS managers, the executives, how do you get them on board to focusing on those areas that need to be improved and retaining those areas where you're already strong?
Well, I think to give you a little bit of history, it's in the summer of 2008, Commissioner Shulman really came in and announced that people was going to be a top priority for him. It really became employee engagement, and people really became one of his strategic foundations in his strategic plan. So really in September of 2008, he established what we call a Workforce of Tomorrow Task Force. And the goal of this particular task force was to really make the IRS a best place to work in government. And also, I'm sure it's no secret that a lot of federal agencies are looking at ways in which they can attract individuals to government jobs, as well as making sure that they retain the right folks. And so this was also a key piece for the task force. And what happened is, what came out of that was actually 58 recommendations in six particular areas, or human capital areas, I should say, in which the IRS really needed to embrace and start looking at. So I think out of that, you know, we decided we didn't want to lose the momentum and make that a one-shot meeting, if you will. So from that, we've also begun doing annual summits to follow up on the findings that came out or the initiatives that came out of that initial meeting. So in 2010, we had what we call an annual Workforce of Tomorrow Summit. And in that summit, we further evaluated the initiatives, or the 58 initiatives that came out of the original Workforce of Tomorrow Task Force, plus this group also came up with 22 additional initiatives to be looking at, and in 2011 we'll be doing the same thing again. So, you know, through the, I guess, advertisement, if you will, of the success of the Workforce of Tomorrow Task Force, and the understanding of the commissioner's commitment to making this a best place to work, and also, you know, we were able to enlist the help of the National Treasury Employees Union. I mean, they were also a big contributor in working with us through this effort and participated in the 2010 annual summit. We've been able to obviously instill in our management, our senior executives, and our leadership overall the importance of these initiatives and the importance of trying to ensure that the IRS is viewed as one of the best places to work in government.
So what I'm hearing from you, Julie, is that it's not only an HR function, but you really put a lot of attention and energy on getting the managers involved as part of the process.
That's correct, yes. I mean, so the managers, people that perhaps were in leadership development programs, other individuals that were seen to really possess an excitement and a desire to work on the the Workforce of Tomorrow Task Force in these summits, they were all participants in these meetings. So, and they were all throughout the IRS in different business units or divisions within the IRS. So it was really a cross-functional effort.
One of the things I hear is that it's very difficult to get employees to take the survey because it's there's so many surveys and there's so many other things to do. How do you get your employees to fill out the survey?
Well, obviously communication is critical, but the most important thing that we try to work on in the IRS is trying to demonstrate that actions do come out of the survey results, and that's something that we continue to struggle with. I mean, the IRS is a very large, dispersed agency, so we try to do as much as we can to show the good work that's coming out of the survey results. And so one example of this is, you know, as I was mentioning, the annual workforce summit is something that we're continuing to do. And in 2011, we're actually going to be going out into the field and talking to employees more, sharing with them the results of these, of the task force, as well as the results of some of the other actions that we're undergoing as a result of these surveys, so that we can also gain more input and more feedback, you know, from the people that are processing the tax returns and from others that are out in the field, the revenue agents, the revenue officers. So we're really able to gain a more cross perspective of all different types of roles within the IRS.
So, Julie, I think 2 years ago when the survey came out, the IRS was 127th on the subcomponent list, and you've moved up a bit, you know, with some pretty good improvement in the last 2 years. Why do you think that happened?
I mean, I really think it goes back to what I was explaining around the commissioner's commitment to it. You know, as I was saying, we have NTU's support in this effort. And it really, because we were able to really, I think, work with all different business units. And, you know, for the sake of the audience, you know, the IRS has about 9 different business units that are very different functions within the agency. And I think because we were able to have such a cross-functional effort around this and around making the IRS the best place to work through the different initiatives that have come out of the Workforce of Tomorrow Task Force and the summits, that you know, all of that is starting to work together to help move us up in the rankings, and employees are beginning to see some of the benefits of the work that was done in 2008.
Okay, Julie, I have just a few more questions for you, so I'd like to ask you to hold on while we take a short break. We'll continue our discussion about the Best Places to Work survey. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. When you say that you work for the federal government, many people out there immediately picture you wearing a suit, driving a government-issue sedan, and living in D.C. While that may be true for some, in reality, federal employees have a wider variety of jobs than most people could ever imagine, from postal workers to CIA agents, from working in an office to working in outer space. These jobs are all so different that it's hard to believe they have something in common, but they do. And that similarity is GEICO. As employees of the federal government, many of these people may be eligible for additional discounts on top of GEICO's already low rates. And just because the cost is lower doesn't mean that GEICO's service is anything less than top rate. So whether you're in animal control or air traffic control, call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO. Or go online to GEICO.com and find out how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford, and today I have on the show Janelle Callahan from the Partnership for Public Service. She's talking about the Best Places to Work survey, and I also have Julie Caldwell with us, who is with the IRS, and she is in charge of dealing with the issues related to the Best Places to Work survey. She works on the employee engagement program at the IRS. And Julie, I have a couple of other questions for you, and one of them is, just to give our listeners I hear a lot from people. They tell me, you know, it's a big deal. If they work at an agency that is not doing so well, like it's at the bottom, it creates sort of a feeling among the employee that, you know, they're working in a not so good place and maybe they should go somewhere else. And so I know that this is a big deal in a lot of agencies. And I want to know, in your job, when the survey results are about to be released, do you anticipate the results? You worry about, are you going to go up or are you going to go down? Is it a nerve-wracking time? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, for me, I always equate receiving survey results to Christmas morning.
Okay.
You know, it's really when you get the survey results and you're just so eager to see exactly what employees are thinking you're doing well in, but also to quickly shift gears to understanding the areas in which you really need to focus to make their daily work life better. You know, having only worked in the human capital office at the IRS, I can't really speak for others in the agency, but certainly it is a very critical and time for the human capital office. We immediately start taking the results of both our internal survey as well as the FedView survey and doing whatever additional analysis that we can do to try to pinpoint any key drivers to the reasons why we may have low scores in particular areas, or, you know, even also what are we doing right and trying to make sure we continue to enhance those particular areas.
So is it the kind of thing where if you improve substantially like you did this year, you go out and celebrate afterwards?
Oh, yeah.
Have a little party?
Yes, I mean, you know, service-wise, the commissioner is obviously very pleased that we have made the improvements that we have. However, we do understand that we still have plenty of more work to do. We certainly will have other areas that we need to continue to work on and continue to improve upon. So it's something that, you know, you have elation and then immediately you get down to work to understanding what you need to do to keep the momentum going for next year.
Right, and I know that's important. And I do remember when I worked at the IRS many years ago that I always thought employee morale was high, but people were aware that they were working in an unpopular agency. And now obviously you have a lot more tools to work with and a lot more resources. Do you feel like this survey results helps you recruit people?
Oh, I think so. One thing that has also occurred is that we did set up an internal recruiting office. So it's a standalone recruiting office that has that was born actually out of one of the Workforce of Tomorrow task forces, which goes out and really helps to improve our campus recruitment efforts. Also, just helping to do a greater outreach to potential candidates everywhere through a creative marketing campaign and things that. The IRS hasn't necessarily done in the past as far as the recruitment piece is concerned. And, obviously it doesn't hurt to say that, you're continuing to move up in the best places to work rankings.
Right. You put the very positive spin on it, which you certainly are able to do at the IRS. Julie, thank you so much for joining us on Fed Talk this morning, and good luck to you. I hope the IRS continues to move up the rankings. I especially root for you since I'm an alumni.
Thank you.
Janelle, let's get back to the Partnership for Public Service. We didn't quite get through through some of the notables. You mentioned, I think, the Department of Transportation moved way up, but who's at the bottom?
At the bottom.
Do we talk about that?
We do. It's Housing and Urban Development and the National Archives and Records Administration are tied for last place with the large agencies. And we do know that both of those agencies are trying really hard to figure out what they need to do to improve.
And what about the small agencies?
For the small agencies,
who's the top? Who's the bottom? Who's improving?
So the top small agency is the Surface Transportation Board for the second time in a row. And they're
that's the old Interstate Commerce Commission, I believe.
That's right. So they're a small independent agency, but administratively affiliated with the Department of Transportation. And we also have the Overseas Private Investment Corporation at number two. They also did very well last year, and the Congressional Budget Office. So the top small agencies scored very well in the previous rankings. And we do have some new agencies this year to the rankings. For the large agencies, we have the Smithsonian Institution, which came in at number four. And for the small agencies, we have the Peace Corps, which was number five.
That was number five this year.
Mm-hmm.
And these are significant improvements for the Smithsonian Peace Corps.
Well, we don't know if it's improved, and this is their first year
they had
in
not
the rankings.
Participated before.
So yes.
And why is it they didn't participate before?
Well, they don't do the OPM survey, so they're another example of an organization that does their own employee survey and provides us with comparable data so that we can do a best places to work index score for them and include them in the rankings.
Okay, and you do that for the legislative agencies and some of the other agencies that aren't under the OPM umbrella?
Yes, if they approach us and work with us to get the appropriate data.
And what about the agencies that have improved a lot? The small agencies who've improved.
So the biggest improvement was the Federal Labor Relations Board, and they had a 250% improvement.
Wow, that's significant.
So they were at the bottom in 2009 and way below even the next lowest agencies. So they really did a lot to change things in the agency. They had new leadership and
They had new political leadership too, and I think that maybe may have contributed.
Right.
Different focus, different mission.
So their scores clearly show that employees are much more satisfied.
That's very interesting. What does the Partnership for Public Service, tell us a little bit about what you do. You announced the survey results, and you're here on the radio talking about them. And you've, I think, been interviewed by other people, and there's been news media coverage. But what else do you do with these survey results?
So we really encourage agencies to dig in and take a closer look at their results. And at the partnership, our government transformation team, they're the ones who do the hands-on work with the agencies. They help agencies do action planning around the results. So
you do this at the partnership?
Yes, the partnership does this. So what we always like to say is that good survey research doesn't give you the answers, but it lets you know what questions to ask. And so we provide this facilitated discussion with employees to help them figure out priorities, what they want to try to improve upon. And that's an example. We worked with IRS to...
As Julie mentioned, that she does work with you all. Tell me a little bit about what you do, what you would do with a federal agency that wants to improve their standing on the Best Places to Work survey.
So in our analysis, we provide each agency with their key drivers of overall satisfaction. So a key driver is the workplace dimensions that have the biggest impact on overall satisfaction. So we know, for example, that for most agencies, effective leadership has the biggest impact. So if an agency can make some improvements on effective leadership, their overall satisfaction will likely go up. So we give agencies some tools to help them understand where they need to focus. And then we provide this facilitated discussion to help them come up with the actions.
And one of the other areas you mentioned was work-life balance. Is how big of an indicator is that?
Well, work-life balance in the past had been a key driver, a third key driver of overall satisfaction. So it's effective leadership, employee skills mission match, and now this year new is pay as a third key driver. So
how did that? That's interesting. Pay was never measured before?
No, pay was measured before. It's just that it wasn't as correlated with the overall satisfaction for employees. So now our results show that there's a stronger relationship this year between overall satisfaction and satisfaction with pay.
So if somebody feels like they're not being paid enough or they're not being recognized in performance awards, things like that, that might lower their feeling about it, their place of work.
That's right.
Well, that's interesting that was not a factor previously. Tell me whether this survey showed any trends, any new developments that perhaps you had not seen before.
Well, what was really interesting for us, there was a 8.4% decrease on our teamwork dimension. So the teamwork includes questions like the people I work with cooperate to get the job done, managers promote communication among different work units, and the scores in this dimension really went down and across many agencies. And so, one of the things that, advising agencies is to, try to figure out what, for the scores that went down, what might be going on, what's behind the numbers.
Do you have any speculation about what's happening, why that would be different 2 years from
years
ago?
We really don't know. We have the numbers that tell us something is going on here, but until, we talk with more people and try to find out, and it could be different reasons at different agencies, but, we think this is really interesting that teamwork had such a drop.
Because I would think that teamwork would be ever more important as government becomes increasingly complex.
Well, the scores are still quite high, but when we're looking at the trend, this was quite a drop.
And what are some of the areas where, the lower areas, the places where across the government improvement needs to be made?
So effective leadership is probably
that's still at the bottom.
It's at the bottom, and we know that it's a key driver. So that's why it's so important, and that's why the partnership puts so much effort into leadership and developing good leaders in government. So that's very important. And we also know that family-friendly culture and benefits tends to be one of the lower-scoring categories. This includes questions having to do with flexible work schedules, telework, and that sort of thing. And so across the board, the government tends not to do so well in those areas.
Government tends to not do well. And I think you mentioned earlier that work-life balance was an important driver in employee satisfaction.
It was in 2009 and is now not as important in this year's rankings.
You look at the survey results, What do you take from it from overall government-wide? I mean, is the government improving as an employer, staying about the same? Is it getting a little bit worse as compared to how it's done in the past? Have you looked at that, or do you just break it down by agencies?
No, we look at the government-wide average. So the overall Best Places to Work index score for government for 2010 was 65, and that was up 2.7% from 2009. So some slight improvement, and actually the score is up 7.4% from 2003.
When it first started.
So over time, we've seen a steady increase.
So one might argue that the existence of these surveys has itself contributed to the overall improvement of government, since agencies can focus on what it is that makes them a less desirable employer.
Right. You can't manage what you don't measure. So, yes, we do think that it may have an impact.
And what about other trends? I understand that there's a difference between what younger people and older people think about the government as an employer.
Sure. So we did some analysis. We break down the rankings into demographic groups. So we have under 40 and over 40. And we found that those who are under 40 and also new to government with less than 3 years of service had a really high index score of 74.7%, which is, you know, almost 10 points higher than the government-wide average.
Very interesting, and I'm sure somebody will be looking at what that means. We're going to stop and take one last break. When we return, we'll wrap up with Janelle Callahan on the Best Places to Work survey, and we're also going to talk to Samantha Donaldson from the partnership about the Service to America medals and the gala that's coming up this coming Wednesday, where this year's award winners will be honored. We'll be right back.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. By now, you've no doubt seen those car insurance commercials with the talking gecko on TV. He's always talking about how people could save 15% or more switching to GEICO. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal in and of itself. But get this. If you're an employee of the federal government, you may be eligible to save even more than that. That's something the gecko didn't mention in all those commercials. And you've probably heard many times about how many people have switched to GEICO. Millions. But what you might not know is how many people stay with GEICO once they've switched. In fact, on average, GEICO customers who are federal employees have stayed with the company for over 20 years. Now that's customer satisfaction. Sound like a good deal to you? Then just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
Back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, your host. Fed Talk is on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and we're wrapping up our discussion with Janelle Callahan from the Partnership for Public Service, and we're going to be switching over to Samantha Donaldson. She's going to talk about the SAMMEs. So, Janelle, what's ahead for the next 2 years or so while you wait for the next survey? What do you do now with this survey? What's your role and the partnership's role going forward?
Well, actually, we're very excited that OPM is now doing the survey every year. So we'll have Best Places to Work rankings annually from now on.
Oh, that's great. That will keep you even busier.
Yes, it will. So we're looking at the data more closely and, looking at some different aspects of it. And, we're also looking at, some different cuts of the data. So, looking at gaps between staff and managers and those different groups. So we're doing some additional analysis. But one other thing I would just like to mention, for your listeners is our Best Places to Work website, bestplacestowork.org. We have, it's a great resource for general information about federal agencies. We have, not only the Best Places to Work scores, but we have demographic information. We also have some tools that let people compare agencies, and it's just a great resource.
So I'd like to switch over now to Samantha Donaldson. Samantha, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you, Belle.
And, of course, this is a very busy time for the partnership with the Best Places to Work survey and the SAMMEs.
Tell
our listeners a little bit about the SAMMEs, those who may not have heard of them.
Well, the Service to America Medals Program, this is our ninth year, and it's a program that pays tribute and honors the, you know, amazing work and contributions that our federal employees are making on behalf of all of us every day. During Public Service Recognition Week in May, we announce our 32 finalists at a breakfast, and then we put together a selection committee of folks ranging from foundation heads to the Office of Personnel Management Director John Barry to Senator Ted Kaufman to Craig Newmart, who founded Craigslist. And we send them the profiles of the 32 finalists, and they vote on our winners, which we're announcing this coming Wednesday.
So we won't know then until then who wins?
No, we won't know then until who wins. But our 32 finalists, they range, you know, from our call to service category, which is federal employees who are under the age of 35 and who have less than 5 years of experience.
And it's absolutely phenomenal what those nominees have
done. It is.
And
all
of
them. This year, for instance, we have a 31-year-old gentleman out in Colorado who works for the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, who's invented the world's most precise timekeeping device. It's just amazing. You know, he works for several Nobel Prize winners, and he's out there doing great work. Till a gentleman who works at the Department of Defense, who's the country director for Georgia and Moldova, and had a key role in the Department of Defense response to the Georgian War. So it's just really amazing the work that these young federal employees are doing. And of course, on the other spectrum, we have the career achievement category, which honors, you know, the breadth of experience of some of our federal employees.
And could you give me an idea of some of the nominees, some of the finalists in that category?
In that category, sure. We have
Career achievement would be over a career. Not just like what they did last year.
Right. So, for instance, there's a woman, Sue Ellen Waldbridge, at the Department of Energy, who helped to improve America's global competitiveness in energy and science, and she created the Science Bowl. And during her length of her career, more than 30,000 students were helped to consider careers in math and science. You know, and then we have a gentleman who was the director of the Storm Prediction Center out in Oklahoma, who was responsible for creating state-of-the-art systems to better predict and provide warnings for tornadoes, to a gentleman at the Naval Research Laboratory who helped invent GPS, which we can all be thankful for.
Oh, yes, and it's obviously a big deal.
I know.
He helped invent it, or he invented it?
Using 95 different satellites, he helped to pioneer the GPS technology.
That's phenomenal. What, and so the other categories you have?
The other categories are, we have citizen services. So, for example, someone in that are Shane Kelly and Eva Risto from the Social Security Administration, who improved the delivery of Social Security benefits to citizens living in impoverished locations by using a two-way video service. So a really innovative way to give citizens the benefits that they need. We have the Homeland Security category. And in that category, we're honoring, as one of our finalists, Kimberly Munley and Sergeant Mark Todd, who confronted the armed gunmen at Fort Hood, the Fort Hood attacks.
Wow.
I know. It's so,
You have both of them as...
We have both of them as finalists this year.
The gala is Wednesday night?
Wednesday night.
Coming up this coming week. Do all of your finalists come to the gala, or just the award winners?
Most of all of our finalists do. You know, we have many that are in the D.C. area, but many that are, you know, from across the country. We have finalists this year in Colorado, California, Texas, Florida. We have a finalist that's in Haiti. So they do all try to make the effort to come to D.C. And, you know, it's just a great evening to honor, you know, their work and all work of federal employees, because they really are, you know, in this day and age when there's been a lot of backlash against, you know, federal employees, this is a great way to celebrate what they're doing for us.
Well, it's phenomenal when you think about what these people do, and they are representative of a lot of other great work that federal employees do. It's a story that needs to be told, and I guess next week it will be told on Thursday morning after the gala, after it's released on Wednesday.
Yes, so stay tuned, you know, on our website at ourpublicservice.org and also servicetoamericamedals.org. We'll have the videos of all our eight winners, which includes Federal Employee of the Year, and then we'll also have their profiles, and then we'll also be beginning to take nominations for next year, so for 2011. So we encourage all of your listeners to nominate their colleagues, their friends, for the work that they're doing. You know, we'd love to share their stories as well.
All right. Well, we have a few more minutes, and you haven't gone through all
no,
your categories yet.
No,
we
still have.
And I was particularly intrigued by Federal Employee of the Year. Is that the biggest award?
It is the biggest award, and it comes from the pool of all our finalists. So we, our selection committee looks at all 32 finalists, and they vote on who they believe is, you know, the story that represents the Federal Employee of the Year. So, you know, some other categories that we
have. So you don't have anybody to talk about as a nominee in there? Because
no, we don't. So you have to stay tuned till next week to find out who our Federal Employee of the Year.
It could be the GPS person.
It could be the GPS person.
That confronted the shooter at Fort Hood.
It could be, or it could be someone in our justice and law enforcement category.
Okay, tell me about that.
So in that category, you know, we're honoring folks in the justice and law enforcement fields. And for example, we have Carl Pike in the Project Coronado team, and they led the largest strike against the La Familia Mexican drug cartel. So they resulted in more than 1,000 arrests, plus the seizure of 1.5 tons of methamphetamine and $32 million in cash.
I don't remember reading about that in the newspapers. I'm sure it must have been.
It happened, you know, for these nominations, it had happened in, like, from 2009 to 2010 time period. But they recently even had a bigger drug bust that was in the news a couple months ago. So their team, you know, still doing amazing work.
1,000 arrests sounds like quite a few.
It does. And then, you know, and another category that's always interesting is our national security and international affairs. In that, you know, we have two gentlemen who are working, one who's from the Department of Treasury and one's from the DEA, and they are leading an interagency effort in Afghanistan to disrupt the flow of funding from the Afghan opium trade and other illicit sources to the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and other terrorist groups. So these gentlemen are, you know, living in Afghanistan, and they were with us at the luncheon in May, and I believe they're going to be with us.
They're going to be here on Wednesday.
Yeah, and they're doing, you know, amazing story. They've been over there, you know, for I think over 2 years, and then one of them led a similar effort in Iraq as well. And then, you know, in our final category is science and environment. We have lots of great green work that's going on. For instance, Jeff Baker, who's in the Department of Energy, and he led the design and construction of the world's first net zero office building. So basically this building.
What does that mean?
So this building, it's created to decrease the energy consumption at no additional cost. So this is amazing. Like, no, it's 100% green building out in Colorado that he created.
Wow.
Another green story, for instance, is in our call to service category. A young woman in the EPA in San Francisco, and she is created green construction materials that she calls climate materials that are helping to reduce our efforts out into the ozone layer. So, you know, lots of great green stories. As Janelle mentioned, the FAA, we have a finalist from the FAA who's helping to green the aviation system, so leading to quieter, more green airplanes.
Okay. Well, that sounds like some great, great stories that you're going to tell. How if somebody wants to find out on Wednesday who won, how would they do that?
They can go to our website. They can go to servicetoamericamedals.org. And on the homepage, you'll see all of our winners. And like I said previously, the videos of each of them.
And when would that be out on Wednesday?
That will be out on Wednesday after 5 p.m. So
after 5, just in time for the gala.
Just in time for the gala.
So, and tell us about the gala.
So the gala is Wednesday evening. Our host this year will be NBC's Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent, Andrea Mitchell. She'll be our MC for the evening. It's a great night that brings public and private sector people together in the same room. We honor each of our winners. There's a red carpet that they get to walk down. We have large kiosks that show a snapshot of their work. And, you know, it's really a chance to celebrate federal employees and, you know, give them thanks.
Well, it should be a great evening, and it's a great event, and you know, many thanks to the partnership for promoting public service. It's one of the great ways that you do promote public service and recognize those who've stood out from you know, above the rest.
And it's a great way. It's a nice, you know, way during Public Service Recognition Week as well.
So anyway, I'd like to thank both of you for being on Fed Talk today. Janelle, thank you for all your work on the Best Places to Work survey. It's obviously making a difference. And Samantha, your work on the Sammies and for all the other work you do at the partnership. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your being on Fed Talk here today. That's all the time we have. Tune in for our next Fed Talk, and until then, have a great weekend.